You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Even though your Bible might identify today's passage as part of Paul's letter to the Ephesians, we know today that this letter is not, in fact, Paul, but written by someone impersonating Paul, a generation or two after Paul. It appears to be written to a mixed community of Jews and Gentiles who are experiencing some tension between the two groups. Essentially, the author is saying, hey, cut out the bickering. None of you are perfect, but God, through Jesus, has given you all a do-over. The main implication is that if God can accept you as bad as you are, the least you can do is show love, grace, and mercy to one another.
Our words of wisdom are from Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 and 9.
For by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not your own doing. It is the gift of God, not the result of works, so that no one may boast.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Back in the 90s, I served a church near Luke Air Force Base, and one of the lead flight instructors was a member of the congregation. Over time, I must have asked him 1,000 questions about being a pilot, places he'd flown, and flying in general. One day he broke down and said, well, would you just like to come out and fly an F-16? Well, after picturing myself accidentally ejecting while still parked on the tarmac, he assured me that I would only be flying the simulator. But wow, what a simulator. Even 30 years ago, it seemed pretty realistic. You literally climb into an isolated cockpit surrounded by an intimidating array of controls, strap in, helmet on, and then the huge wraparound screen comes on. Wow. Even just taking off was a challenge. I was instructed to just concentrate on the stick while my instructor handled the throttle and a dozen other switches, buttons, and toggles. Once I was airborne, it was a little easier, although I kept trying to cause an international incident by trying to refuel from Russian bombers instead of American tankers. But here's where it really got scary. Landing. I made my instructor very nervous, and rightfully so. On one approach, I hit the runway so hard and at such an extreme angle that I passed right through the runway, and when I recovered level flight, I was flying underground. We looked up, and we saw cactus and buildings going by above me. I heard my veteran flight instructor mumble, I didn't even know it would do that. Well, here's where it got good. After every crash landing, the instructor simply hit the reset button, and I was back at 20,000 feet, approaching the runway. Now, I don't remember how many times I tried and failed, but it didn't matter. As long as I kept trying and learning, I got to start over. I only wish real life was as simple as that. But no, real life is full of real consequences, and the second-guessing, rationalizing, blaming, and all the other things we resort to when things don't go the way we expect or would like. And sometimes, that's where you'll hear this old chestnut rolled out. God helps those who help themselves. Positively biblical, isn't it? somewhere in the book of Hesitations, I think. Well, no, actually, it's nowhere in the Bible, I promise. Truth is, it's from Ben Franklin's Poor Richard's Almanac. But it sounds biblical enough to pass for scripture, doesn't it? The problem is, it's not true. More like a half-truth. If you apply yourself and work hard, sure, you're likely to get ahead. So much so that it may seem that there's a little divine bump added as a reward for all that hard work. But in reality, it's the evil twin of the whole Deuteronomic code of you get what you deserve and you deserve what you get. This sense that if you're successful, it's because God is rewarding you. And by golly, you worked really hard for this. You're such a good person. But sadly, it's only a half-truth. Back in 2012, then-President Barack Obama learned that people don't like to be reminded that God helps those who help themselves may not be completely true. They don't like to be reminded that their success is built on the shoulders of those who've gone before. In a campaign speech in Virginia, Obama said, "Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we have that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you've got a business, you didn't build that." What he rather inelegantly was trying to say is that whatever success we have, more often than not, others have laid the groundwork. The phrase, "you didn't build that," was taken out of context and used to make it seem like the president was dissing business people. It's almost as though people need to hear our Ephesians passage all over again. Hey, stop your bickering. Whatever wholeness that you have is a gift and not a result of your own works alone. Cut it out with the boasting. But that Deuteronomic code is really seductive. We look at the things we have and think it's all our doing. And God must be rewarding us for how good we are. Forgetting the flip side of that coin lodged in our psyches. And the reason other folks are not so well off is because they're being punished somehow. And that too is God's doing. We get to feel good about ourselves for our comfortable circumstances that in many cases we don't deserve, really. And we get to feel superior to those who are suffering or in pain that they don't deserve really either. The idea is so hardwired into our noggins that you see it across the cultural, philosophical, and religious landscape. Aristotle argued that happiness and success depend primarily on one's own actions and rational decisions, while some early Christian thinkers preached the idea that God rewards those who make an effort to live morally. But perhaps nowhere are the roots of this idea more compatible than with the whole Protestant work ethic, suggesting that God's favor is contingent upon one's own industriousness and self-reliance. And of course, you saw it weaponized in last month's election. The criminals, rapists, and bad hombres are swarming across our border, and we give them hotel rooms and gift bags and debit cards. Those people don't deserve it. But somehow, by virtue of our having simply been born in the right place, right time, and of a currently favorable ethnic background, we do deserve what we have and have been given. Now, I don't know for sure what the Jewish and Gentile factions were arguing about in Ephesus. But remember, the Jewish folks were the privileged class out of which Christianity had grown. The Gentiles? They were definitely second class, probably criminals and rapists as far as some of the Jews were concerned. So the message to all of them was not just to cut out the bickering, but a reminder of one of Jesus' most recognizable teachings. His help was focused not on those who could do for themselves, but on those who could not help themselves, particularly the marginalized, be they lepers, tax collectors, or orphans, widows, and the refugee. So, while the underlying message of our unbiblical Bible wisdom, God helps those who help themselves, emphasizes the importance of human effort, the biblical perspective reminds us that there's something we shouldn't overlook, the divine wild card of grace. Don't get too puffed up with pride about how amazingly self-reliant you are. Even the genetic luck of the draw giving you the capacity to be self-reliant is not of your doing. Is our good fortune just the randomness of the universe? No, I think it's obvious that people who help themselves are leveraging their divinely given gifts, but this is just a half-truth that is at odds with our Ben Franklin quote. In my experience, God helps those who don't help themselves as much or more than those who do help themselves. People who do irresponsible things, who are apathetic, who are caught up in impossible circumstances, who are just plain being stupid. You know, people like me. And this is where the author of Ephesians won't let it go. This grace is not the result of anything we've done to deserve it. So no boasting. Better that you leverage the gift to the benefit of others who don't have the privileges of your life. We've just come through Thanksgiving and are coming up to a time of celebration and joy that is somewhat muted for some because of uncertainty about the economy. But whatever happens in the days ahead, most of us will continue to be the recipients of amazing financial good fortune. So as we wrap up our Keeping Up the Momentum campaign, I want to remind everyone that whatever we can give towards our $200,000 goal is foundational to keeping grace moving forward. Remember, as much as we'd like to think our good fortune is the result of our own hard work and helping ourselves, it is a mix of circumstances and events beyond our control and for which we can't boast. It's a gift. So whatever we can pay forward is an act of gratitude, acknowledging that reality. If the fountains can pay off our mortgage and pay off the other investments that make what we do as a faith community possible, we will be freed up to keep making more of what you love about the fountains happen. But for more people, people who are longing for the message that we have to offer. St. Teresa of Avila was born in Spain just over 500 years ago. As a Carmelite nun, she focused on living a life of simplicity and showing her love to those around her in simple acts of kindness and grace. Her now famous poem reminds us of the kind of life Jesus expects of each of us. Christ has no body but yours, no hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes with which he looks with compassion on this world. Yours are the feet with which he walks to do good. Yours are the hands with which he blesses all the world. Yours are the hands, yours are the feet, yours are the eyes. You are his body. Christ has no body now but yours. No hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes with which he looks with compassion on this world. Christ has no body now on earth but yours. Yes, God helps those who help themselves. But don't let that old phrase eclipse what's really going on. God helps those who don't help themselves too, probably more. And more often than not, our lives are the product of that help that we don't acknowledge or feel any gratitude for. One of my favorite guitarists is Stevie Ray Vaughan. As a hopelessly addicted drug addict and alcoholic, he didn't deserve to be one of the most brilliant, gifted guitar players ever, right? After he was killed in a helicopter crash in the summer of 1990, it wasn't a surprise to me that his family requested that Amazing Grace be sung at his funeral. No less than Bonnie Raitt, Stevie Wonder, and Jackson Browne led those gathered in singing the hymn. And at one point, the crowd stopped singing, and the trio sang an a cappella verse. As Stevie Wonder sang, "I once was blind, but now I see," it was a reminder that we're not talking about literal things here. We're talking big picture. Can we see, really see, the big picture here? God does help those who help themselves, and those who cannot help themselves, who will not help themselves, or are too proud to admit they need any help. And we can do the same. We can help. But not without all of us pitching in with our resources in a way that makes helping doable in the real world. We need to let go of the self-serving idea of God helps those who help themselves and reorient ourselves back to what we know is so much more true. God helps those who help others. You already know that God isn't going to love you more because you believe the right stuff. But there is a direct correlation between our happiness and wholeness with how much we participate as purveyors of the kind of grace that knows that the most rewarding way to help ourselves is by helping others. Be well.
Hey, and don't forget, if you like what you heard today, buy me a coffee.
Thanks, Ryan.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.